Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, our newsmaker interview is with Bill Wells, the mayor of El Cajon. He'll be talking with us about his reelection campaign, his accomplishments and goals if reelected, as well as some challenges facing El Cajon, including the city's conflict with the County of San Diego over how best to handle the homelessness problem in the city. Then on Destination East County, we'll tell you about some fun festivals and events coming up across San Diego's inland region, including a fall festival in Julian, Oktoberfests in La Mesa and El Cajon, and a culinary competition at Parkway Plaza's new Taste for the Space contest, in which a diverse array of food businesses compete to be chosen for a space in the regional shopping mall. We'll also have highlights from a disturbing report by CalMatters on the alarmingly high rate of suicides and PTSD among California's wildland firefighters as climate change fuels larger and more destructive firestorms. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my very special guest is Bill Wells, the mayor of El Cajon. He has served as mayor since 2013 on the City Council and the Planning Commission before that. He is also a mental health services professional, CEO of Broadwell Health, and he's raised three kids here along with his wife, Betty. And today we're here to talk about his reelection campaign and some of the key issues facing El Cajon. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So why don't you start by telling us what you consider some of your most significant accomplishments for the city in your 9 years as mayor?
Well, you know, the main thing that any mayor does is keep people safe. Right. And, you know, sometimes those achievements can be hard to quantify. But I think that we have a really good relationship with our police department right now. We're at full strength, which is unusual for most police departments right now. We've actually, because of the pandemic and the fact that San Diego had vaccine requirements, we were able to pick up 10 police officers from the city of San Diego, which was really a great thing for us because they're all trained and they're seasoned officers. So that was helpful. The fire department's also doing well. We're busy. We're the second busiest fire department in the entire nation.
Wow. I didn't know that.
One of the busiest police departments. And, you know, that kind of comes with the nature of El Cajon.
Yeah.
El Cajon is an interesting city. It's in the suburbs. It's got a lot of wealth and a lot of beautiful homes. And in the mid-city, there's a lot of apartments that were built in the 50s and 60s, which is fine. I think, you know, people need a place to live for sure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that brings low-income housing. Low-income housing brings its own problems, oftentimes crime and urban blight. And so we spent a fair amount of time dealing with that. Of course, probably the issue that takes up 75-80% of my brain space is homelessness.
We're going to dive into that in just a moment, but I'll let you finish your thought there.
Which is interesting for me because I have a doctorate in psychology and I've worked with chronically mentally ill all my adult life. And so I'm used to working with a lot of the population that is on the streets. I'm used to their mental health problems. I'm used to their addiction problems. And so it's interesting that I'm in a situation where I'm now, again, really faced with trying to help these people and a lot of them who don't want to get help. And that's very challenging.
Yes, it is. I know that El Cajon has helped fund some programs to help the homeless, including notably the East County Transitional Living Center, Way Home program or whatever it was, the one that reunites them with families if they have family to go back to. And most recently, construction of tiny homes to help homeless women. And yet, recently, the city has found itself at odds with the county over a voucher program where the county is putting homeless people into 8 motels in El Cajon. I know that at least 35% of those people are from outside the El Cajon area completely, maybe elsewhere in East County or somewhere else. And of that 65% that they say are from El Cajon, we don't really know how many are the unincorporated part that's really county control versus the city. The city has accused the county of basically, dumping homeless people in El Cajon that already has more of them than anywhere other than San Diego. And the county is defending, standing by its actions. So, Bill, can you please share what your concerns are with what the county is doing? And ideally, how would you like to see the issue resolved so that hopefully, these folks, the ones that are willing to get help, at least get the help that they need and where your city isn't being sort of, burdened with perhaps more than its fair share?
I'm happy to talk about that. You were asking about accomplishments. I have a few other things to say.
Oh, sure.
You want me to finish that or
yes?
Go on?
No, go ahead and then you can jump
in. I think the other part is that certainly financial health is important, and we have a $53 million reserve. We have a balanced budget, and I think we're on good footing financially, which is super important.
It is.
We've done a lot with, we have the highest rating you can get with roads and paving of roads. And I know that's not very exciting and sexy, but people care about potholes and paved roads.
You know what, Bill, as somebody with 5 bad discs in my neck and back, I sure appreciate not going over potholes or having to go see the chiropractor. So I think it does matter.
Yeah. I think we've dealt with crisis as well. We had the Alongo shooting in the midst of a lot of rioting and a lot of loss of life and property. And we were able to weather that without any real loss of property, no loss of life. And,
I was going to say, for those who may be new and not remember that, it was a Black individual who was having a mental health crisis and was shot by a white police officer when he pulled out what looked like a gun. And it turned out it was a vaping device that looked like one. And it did spark protests and things.
Yeah, it was right after Ferguson. And,
it
was right in the middle of all that explosion that was happening in the country over this particular issue.
Yeah.
So, to me, that's like, if you ask me the hallmarks of my career, although that was probably the most
difficult
time of my career, I felt like we came through that really well.
Yeah, I remember you took a middle line and you actually got a little bit of criticism from some, but because you stood by the police officer and who was found, by the way, not to have done any wrongdoing by the DA, but you also voiced empathy for the victim's family here for this, for this tragedy.
I did take a lot of criticism from the right.
Yeah.
For being empathetic. To me, that was like, why would you not be empathetic for somebody who,
human. Yeah.
who lost their family member being shot in the street?
Exactly.
And they were, the fact that they were on drugs and acting erratically, it doesn't excuse the fact that you lost somebody. So I really felt, I was watching that, everything that was happening in the country, and I thought, well, this is what's missing. We got people immediately go on the defensive and say, we were right to shoot that person, which they probably were right. There's probably nothing else that could have been done in a lot of these cases.
Teams, I guess. That's a good question, though. Since that, has been something been done to get, more PERT teams out there? So when you have someone in this kind of crisis,
I wish I could say,
maybe
I could
the first
say
person
yes.
there isn't the officer with the gun, but a mental health, counselor or someone.
So the funding for programs like the PERT team come through the county. Mm-hmm. And they really call the shots on how many PERT officers there are. I think in a city like El Cajon, we should have a couple of sets of PERT officers basically all through the busy time and then one set of PERT officers through the nighttime.
Yeah.
Because we have so many board and cares here. We have so many places where people with mental health problems live. I just think it's – and so I'm advocating for that. I'm fighting with the county about that, and they're – of course, they have other priorities and they don't want to spend the money. And look, I got to be honest, it's kind of we'll go into this other thing about the motels.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of goes along the same line, though. I really feel like the county does not value spending money and taking care of the people of the East County nearly as much as they want to take care of people in the beach communities and, the other parts of town. And, you know, there's political reasons for that, I think, but there's also, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind that most of these people that work in the county and run the county, they live at the beach, they live in Carmel Mountain, they live.
Right. So they're not seeing these problems on a daily basis.
They don't live in the East County. And so they, it's not their priority. And I want to do what I can to change that.
True.
But you want to go on and talk about what happened with that voucher program?
Sure. Yeah. So go ahead. Let's hear your concerns about it, Bill.
Yeah. So we started noticing a huge increase in calls for service at the hotels over the past few weeks. We also had a lot more police activity going on out there, a lot more drugs, people overdosing on fentanyl. We had problems with people calling in saying that they were harassed by drug dealers on the street outside of these hotels, and they were threatened. And so we sent our city manager and some police officers down to investigate. And
he got threatened. He
did. Yeah. Yeah. he got threatened with being beaten if he didn't get out of there.
Yeah.
And what we found was that 8 hotels in the downtown area had over 25% occupancy with county homeless vouchers. And a couple of them had 70-80% occupancy, and one had 100% occupancy with county homeless vouchers.
And that's more, I mean, at least twice as many hotels as any other city in the county had.
Yeah, so just to put it in perspective, El Cajon has 100,000 residents. We have 8 of the 15 hotels in the program. 8 of them are in El Cajon.
Yeah.
The city of San Diego, which has well over 1 million people, has 2. So we have 4 times as many hotels in the program. We are taking 45% of the homeless vouchers in the small city of El Cajon.
Yeah, that's a lot.
My thing was, why? You know, this is a big county. There's lots of jurisdictions, lots of hotels. Why send them all to one small municipality?
Yeah, and yet both Supervisor Anderson and Supervisor Fletcher, so it's bipartisan. They're both trying to, you know, defend this here and say that El Cajon isn't doing its share somehow. How would you respond to that? And what do you see as a resolution to this?
I mean, I don't see this as a partisan issue.
It shouldn't be.
You know, homelessness is a problem that Democrats, Republicans, Independents all have to deal with equally.
Yeah.
but I see this more of an issue of kind of a pattern that we've seen. You know, we've seen sex offenders, you know, 83% of the sex offenders that are placed in San Diego County are placed in the East County.
Yeah, which is unfair. Yeah.
You know, why are all the homeless people being sent to our hotels? Why are all the sex offenders being sent to our neighborhoods? And we could debate all day long as to the reasons for that, but it doesn't really matter. My job as the mayor of El Cajon is to demand equity. And that's a phrase that's thrown around a lot these days.
It is.
And you know, let's put our money where our mouth is.
Yeah. It's not that you're not willing to help some of the homeless, the people who became homeless in El Cajon, for instance. It's the issue of the county, A, not telling you about this and just doing it, and B, bringing in a bunch of people who weren't from El Cajon and sort of exacerbating the problems that your city already had. Is that kind of it in a nutshell?
That's perfect. I mean, from an anecdotal perspective, we talked to a lot of people and they told us they were from downtown San Diego. They told us from Natural City and Chula Vista and from Mira Mesa. And, you know, they told us that sheriff's deputies drop them off here.
Yeah.
We told them that county employees move them around every 28 days because by law they can't stay in a hotel for more than 28 days.
Right. And just to throw in the county side of it, they do say that I think a third of these people or so eventually get transitioned into permanent housing. So it's not that it's not doing any good. Apparently it is, but it's caused issues, you know. So go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, that's great. But again, I'm not sure why this town has to carry all the water for that.
Correct. Yeah, no, I understand. What do you think about the care court plan that I guess is going to be rolling out? It was originated, I guess, you know, with the governor and the Democrats up there.
Yeah.
But it's the idea would be that there would be a way to get severely mentally ill people off of the streets, get them into facility, get them into care. And yet there would be some protection so that every so often it has to come before a court again. So that in theory, people can't just get locked up forever and forgotten about.
Yeah, you know, I'm often accused of being a pretty hardcore partisan, mm-hmm. but I was the first mayor to sign on to the care court idea. Mm-hmm. Our city sent a letter of support. Mm-hmm. I've worked with the governor's office to help promote that, to help talk other conservative yes. mayors into buying into this program, because I think it's a great program. It's what I've been yeah. talking about for years. We need to expand the ability to get people off the street. There are some people that want treatment, and that's great, but there are a lot of people who don't want treatment.
Yeah, we saw one the other day threatening to jump off a bridge in Lakeside. You know, a woman who's been, you know, I guess consistently kind of out there showing obvious mental health issues. And yet, you know, under the current law, about all they can do is maybe put somebody on a 72-hour hold. Not, I mean, you must see that all the time as a mental health professional, right?
So I don't work in the emergency rooms anymore, but I, for 30 years, I did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have a license to write 72-hour holds. I've probably written, you know, 20 or 30,000 of them in my career. I'm very familiar with the system, and it doesn't work. You know, we keep people off the street for supposedly 72 hours. But frankly, the hospitals are pushing and the physicians are pushing to get people released even after a day or, you know, a day and a half, because there's no money in it. And it's really pointless, because it's not enough time to really affect any significant change. And people don't want to change. A lot of people don't want to change. Mm-hmm. So the system really is kind of window dressing. It doesn't really do a whole lot.
Let's talk about another issue. Crime is another issue that residents in the city, as in many cities, raise concerns over. As you noted, you recently hired more police officers on, I think it's a temporary basis. And recently, the city council and yourself voted to put a measure on the ballot that would raise the sales tax by 0.5 cent, specifically to, among other things, hire more police long term and get more homeless people off the streets. And this comes after you, as the mayor, led efforts to do other things to boost tax revenues, like bringing in the car dealerships and the hotels to the city. Can you explain why you think a tax increase is needed now, Bill, and how the money specifically would be used? You know, in other words, how would it be addressing the homeless issues? Some people have asked me. And what would you say to those in your conservative base who generally have this, you know, no new taxes approach?
Yeah. Well, look, I, you know, through my political career, I've been dogmatically against new taxes. I hate the waste and abuse that comes with taxation. Mm-hmm. I think people are overtaxed, and I don't like it. But the new reality is that crime in California has been decriminalized. For the most part, it's almost impossible to arrest anybody. Even if you arrest somebody, they won't book them in the jails. There's all these no bail laws.
COVID issues where the jails were overcrowded, so they weren't really.
I would say that's an excuse, but you know, because we're past COVID now and we're still having the same excuses. But irregardless, criminality in California is an epidemic proportions in every city in California. And it really has to do with laws that have been passed in Sacramento that have made it very, very difficult to use the penal system to stop people from committing crimes. I understand. I don't even want to get into the debate about that. The reality is that there is a movement to empty prisons. I mean, we've closed two entire prisons in California in the last couple of years.
Those were where the feds said it was so overcrowded and the conditions were so bad that they kind of made them do it. But at any rate,
that's part of it. But the other part of it is that we've been emptying the prisons. We've been letting people back onto the streets. There's a massive movement from wanting to keep offenders in prison to people that feel like it's racist or it's not equitable to keep people in prison. So they're
going sort of in the pendulum swing from one extreme to another right now.
I disagree with it, but it doesn't really matter what I think. The reality is that crime is up. It's up in alcohol and it's up everywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, early in this show, I mentioned that we're the second busiest fire department in the nation per capita. We have one of the busiest police departments per capita.
That's amazing.
We have been on a shoestring budget since I got here. We have 25 less employees in El Cajon now than we had when I first got here. Mm-hmm. We have we've winnowed down our payroll as much as we possibly can.
So you tighten the belt and cut whatever fat there might have been already.
Yeah, we renegotiate our pension obligations, saved $100 million there. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing everything we possibly can. And mostly it's because I've been really strong with the staff saying, I do not want to raise taxes. Let's find another way. Let's bring in more revenue. Let's cut the, mm-hmm. let's tighten our belt. Let's cut whatever we have to do.
Yeah. So we're talking a half cent raise in the sales tax for folks that may not know is what's going to be on the ballot coming
up. So we finally got to a point though, where I had to admit that if we were going to keep up with the new reality of crime and the busyness of our fire department, that we had to raise the sales tax a half cent. Or we would fall behind. We need to hire. We don't need to cut police officers. We need to hire 20 to 25 more.
And
we
what about the homeless end of it? How will the money, if the sales tax measure passes, what will the money that's sort of earmarked for homelessness be doing? Is that helping police sort of clear homeless camps? Is it helping the homeless get into services? What would happen? All of it.
Okay. Yeah, all of it. You know, I don't know if people know this or not, but per capita, El Cajon spends more money on homelessness than any other jurisdiction in the county.
Wow.
Per capita, we have the highest number of shelter beds in the county.
Yeah, admirable.
And we want to continue that, you know, and there's a reason for that too. I mean, frankly, we have a lot more of a homeless problem than Solana Beach does or Carmel Mountain Ranch does.
Or even La Mesa or Santee for that matter.
Yeah. So, you know, it's incumbent upon us to do more, and we get that. I feel very strongly, and I think the rest of the city council also feels very strongly, that compassion is a very important part of this.
El Cajon is unusual, I think, in that on your city council, city council members who've been homeless themselves. You have another who's taken homeless people into his own house to stay. So there's definitely, I think the term compassionate conservative applies in El Cajon, maybe not some other places, but it still does out there.
I don't think we're as partisan as people really think we are. I think we're pretty much common sense folks that just want to do right by the city. Now, having said that, I'm not going to reflexively jump on the bandwagon,
of course,
like these decriminalizing programs or these gender issues. And there's a lot of things that are happening that I can't buy into. But
some of which aren't even really a city issue so much.
And that's exactly right. Most of those things. Like, let's talk about abortion. I mean, the only thing I want to say about abortion is that it will never come across my desk. I will never make a decision about abortion. It's never going to be a city issue.
Yeah.
So what I feel about it personally really makes no difference. So, you know, but homelessness, however, it really does.
Yeah, you can make a difference.
I think we've taken a measured approach where we provide lots of enforcement. You know, we don't allow tents on the street. I know tents pop up. But we take them down, not unlike like downtown San Diego. We don't have tent cities.
Yeah, there's a federal or a court case ruling a couple of years back that basically said, that for a city to or county to be able to clear away homeless encampments, they have to have shelter beds available. And a lot of places don't, so they're kind of stuck with, you know, tents on public property. But in El Cajon, apparently you have enough of the shelter beds, so they do have that. They have an option and a place to go if they want to. Bill, as a mental health professional, you were one of the early voices raising concerns about impacts of pandemic shutdowns and isolation on people's mental health, which is an important issue. Your opponent, however, has criticized some of your other handling on COVID things, such as, you know, voicing defiance over business shutdown orders that came from higher up, speaking unmasked, you know, at a rally in downtown El Cajon, for example. He's a cancer survivor. He says, you know, leaders should serve as a role model protecting the public health. So I wanted to give you a chance to respond to that and explain your stances on that.
You know, at some level, I'm not sure I want to relitigate the entire COVID thing because that's been, you know, been the topic of conversation for 3 years. But I feel very good about what we did. I think history has proven me right. Even Dr. Fauci has said that the vaccines don't really work as they're supposed to work. The masking.
Well, I mean, I have to counter that a little bit. The vaccines, it's been found they don't really completely prevent COVID, but what they do prevent is largely is dying. The CDC statistic is that if for unvaccinated people, they're at a 96% higher risk of dying from COVID if you're 50 or older than those who have been vaccinated and had the boosters. But that said, I understand your point that it's not a complete.
The entire argument was you've got to wear a mask because you might make somebody else sick. Mm-hmm. And then towards the end of the pandemic, it shifted and said, well, it's not going to change anything about making anybody else sick. Or when I said the mask, I said, you've got to have the vaccine because if you don't, you might make somebody else sick. And then they said, well, the vaccine doesn't really stop you from spreading it, but you personally might do better in the hospital if you've had the vaccine. But then at that point, then it becomes an individual right. I mean, you can make that decision as to how sick you want to get or not. I don't think the government should be coming in and telling you. It certainly shouldn't be firing nurses and doctors and pilots and cops and firemen because they personally felt like they were willing to take the risk, as opposed to the risk of taking the vaccine, which, you know, as I'm sure you know, there's been a huge amount of people saying that there's terrible vaccine injuries now happening all over.
Yeah, I don't know about huge, but there's certainly some.
This is going to be contentious. This is an interesting dichotomy that people feel very strongly on both sides of the issue.
They do.
But anyway, I stand by what I said and what I did. I never told some people that they couldn't shut down. I never told people that they shouldn't wear a mask if they didn't want to. I never told people they shouldn't stay in their house if they didn't want to.
You felt it should be a matter of personal choice, basically.
I felt like destroying our economy and damaging people with forced isolation was a little bit frightening, especially when you talk about the loss of lack of liberty and the kind of the rise of the totalitarian state.
Yeah. So. Okay. On another note, Bill, two of El Cajon's most important attractions were in segments of the economy that were certainly suffering under the pandemic. One is the Magnolia Theater, which reopened actually on your watch after it was closed for 10 years. You guys got Live Nation there to manage it, but then had to shut down again for a while with COVID. And the other is Parkway Plaza, the regional shopping mall that recently sold and is under new ownership now. So I wanted to ask, are you committed to trying to keep these resources available to the public, or do you have any other ideas for say for Parkway Plaza? Or
let's start with the Magnolia Theater.
Mm-hmm. How are they doing now with the
not as they're doing unbelievably well, much better than we had anticipated. We're about 3 years ahead of where we thought we would be.
Thrilled to hear that.
Their shows are they're having several shows a week, and most mm-hmm. of them are sold out. It's been a great venue.
Super.
Have you been to the venue?
Oh, yeah, I have. I've been to a couple of concerts there before the, the shutdowns and all that.
I just did a benefit concert there in
You did? For the home there again, for the homeless with your piano playing and your saxophone.
It was about $80,000.
Oh, there you go.
But it was, so we're super committed to that. Live Nation was really the key. I think that for years we tried to do it with local theater groups, which I think their heart was in the right place.
But they're not professional managers, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't have the juice to bring in all these acts, and Live Nation certainly does. And
yeah, they're the biggest concert promoter in the nation, actually. So
yeah, so that was a great boon, and that's Doug. I got to give all the credit to Doug Williford for that. He
yeah, your former manager, city manager.
He told me that he wanted to get Live Nation. I said, good luck, and he said, oh, I'm going to do it, and he went out and hunted them down and badgered them until they came down and looked at the place. So good for him. He did a great job.
Fantastic. What about Parkway Plaza?
Well, Parkway Plaza.
I should say that's private property, not public. So it's a little different, but still, nonetheless, I'm sure the city has, can put in its say.
We'll do everything we can to help Parkway Plaza survive and do well. I mean, it's certainly a big part of our economy. We mm-hmm. have, I think, 12 million distinct visits to Parkway Plaza a year.
Wow.
And a big part of our sales tax comes from Parkway Plaza. So we have a vested interest in making sure that Parkway Plaza does well. So we'll do whatever we can. It's a little difficult because, you know, the state took away our redevelopment money. So we don't have the incentive kind of money that we used to have to try to get new businesses. You know, like it used to be that we could bring a new restaurant in and say, we'll pay for some of your tenant improvements, or
Interesting thought, with the surpluses that California has, maybe they could someday bring redevelopment money back, you know?
I'm open. If they're willing to send us a check, I'm willing to use it.
Take it. There you go.
You know, I don't think Parkway Plaza is going to go away. I think we're going to have to rethink it. I think some of it may become housing.
Yeah. It'd be more mixed use, some retail remaining, but maybe some of the outer buildings, you know.
I don't think retail is going away, but I think it's going to look different than it did when we were younger. And, you know, I think the big department store may not be around as much as it used to be. The Macy's and the Nordstrom's and all those kind of places.
Sears.
But Sears is closing all over the country. So, you know, just like anything else, we have to adjust and roll with the changes in the technology and the buying habits and the personal habits of people. But I still think that that's a great location. We can, you know, we certainly need more restaurants in El Cajon. So we're doing everything we can to attract more restaurants to that area. We need more housing in El Cajon, and there's lots of room on Parkway Plaza to do housing. So we're talking to them about the process and seeing what kind of incentives we can give them to do that.
That was going to be another question was about housing, which was the other issue that your opponent, a realtor, raised is, you know, wanting to bring more affordable housing, figure out a way to do that. But so you could envision having more housing at Parkway Plaza, perhaps a component might be affordable.
Yeah. We're rethinking our approach to housing. You know, when I first got on the city council, there was basically a moratorium on any more apartments because we feel like
there were problems, early
too
on.
Many apartments in El Cajon. Mm-hmm. But lately, we've been approving some apartments that made sense. Senior housing, veterans housing, other kinds of...
Something I always wonder about is with El Cajon, not so much everywhere, but with El Cajon, you're unusual in that you have a lot of the immigrant and refugee families coming in from places like the Middle East. Many of them have large families. You know, they come here from these war-torn places. They've got 8 kids. And what do you do if you've got 6 kids or 8 kids and you can barely afford a 2-bedroom apartment? I wonder if anyone's ever looked at any kind of housing models that would help these families with larger children that are, you know.
You know, I've got to be honest, I've never really even thought about that.
Like maybe a little bigger,
but I bet, you know,
or more storage. Yeah, or, I don't know what it would be, you know, but
something. Building more 3- and 4-bedroom apartment homes.
Maybe something like that.
You know, it's not a bad idea. I think you're right. You have to adjust and you have to change with the way your society changes. And you can't always be fighting your grandfather's war, right? You know, it's we can't build and plan like it's 1975. It's not. It's
right. And even the bedrooms themselves, a bedroom that's big enough to have children sharing a room, maybe,
sure,
you know, 2 or 3, and like you say, 3 or 4 bedrooms. But anyway, I just wondered about that. Some other places, some other countries do that, but I haven't seen it here. And a lot of the zoning restrictions make it really, really hard for these folks. Even when they're on their feet and they get a job, they still can't. You know, the families are still very crowded. So it's just a thought, you know.
And just to be clear, though, of course, a lot of people say, why don't you build a Cracker Barrel, or why don't you build a neighborhood bakery, and because we don't build anything. We
incentivize,
we encourage businesses to come in and invest their money. So we don't build housing. The market builds housing, and, you know, we help them overcome obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
So if there are, like you said, if there are zoning problems, I think we have to be flexible and be open to changing zoning to fit the new reality of modern life. But so it's a dance.
Yeah. Bill, on another note, your company is Broadwell Health. It's been in the news, as you know, the last few weeks. It's one of the many companies that had contracted with Borrego Health to provide mental health services. And now Borrego is under criminal investigation, lost its Medi-Cal funding, and as of this week, filed for bankruptcy over allegations of fraudulent billings and some other things. Your company, I read, is among those that's actually owed money by Borrego Health. But I wanted to give you a chance to explain to those who may have heard some of these stories, you know, how you got involved with them. For the record, has your company been under any investigation tied to this? No. And what lessons have you have been learned from the situation?
Well, you know, so our involvement with Borrego Health is we are a contractor. So we provide services to them, just like we do to San Ysidro Health and Vista Health and Neighborhood Health and a handful of other health agencies. These are federal qualified health clinics that need help with their psychiatric psychology departments, or they don't want to do it and they're obligated to do it. So they contract out with us in various ways, either to do a little bit or a lot of their psychiatry or their psychology. And Borrego Health did the same thing. But we saw the handwriting on the wall. And we stopped doing business with them about a year ago.
Okay. So, thank you for that.
You know, and Borrego was under investigation. But to give you an analogy, if you went and bought groceries at the Vons and then the Vons was under investigation for selling tainted meat, you wouldn't be liable for having done business with Vons.
Correct.
And they came to us and said, we need a service. That's what we do. We provide that service. So we provided it to them. And, you know, none of our billing was part of this problem that the state found problems with. You know, we were doing a completely different kind of service.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that, Bill. Sure. On a more positive note, would you like to share what endorsements you have that you're proud of and where folks can learn a little more about your candidacy?
Well, I think probably the most telling is that the police department and the fire department unions, even though I historically have been at odds with unions, have decided to endorse me and support me because I think they see that I've been supportive of them over the years and that, I'm a big law and order guy and public safety guy. Mm-hmm. And so I've made sure that they have everything they need. You know, that includes equipment and money, but it also includes mental health treatment for PTSD. I'm big on that.
Very important. We're hearing more and more about that, especially with firefighters these days.
Mm-hmm. So. We launched a really innovative program where we have dogs that we've trained. It's very expensive, but these dogs live at the fire stations and the firefighters get a chance to, you know, take care of the dogs and pet the dogs and be with the dogs. And it's, you know, significantly helped morale. Yeah. And
sweet.
People that come back from a difficult thing that they've seen, they say they feel a lot better when they spend time with the dog. So, you know, we're increasing that program. Those are all just small things, but they add up to, I think, a good relationship with public safety. And that's why both of them have endorsed me.
Yeah, the dog thing reminds me of another thing the city did for the homeless that I thought was really creative and smart. It's like, why didn't someone else think of that? The homeless people who were, it turns out, some of them not getting services they needed or healthcare they needed because they didn't have anywhere to put their dog. They didn't want to give up their dog. So you made room in the shelter there, the Alcohol and Animal Shelter, where they could drop off the dog for a few hours, I think up to a half day or a day or something, and get it back.
Where my experiences really help because a lot of times I would have people come into the emergency room and I'd say, hey, let's get you into a shelter. And they say, well, I don't want to go because I've got a dog or I've got a cat.
Interesting.
And they just in the end, I would say, well, look, I'll find the Humane Society will keep your dog or cat while you're in the hospital. But they weren't comfortable with that. So we decided to develop a specific program where they would be guaranteed they'd get their dog cat back.
You know,
before that, they weren't guaranteed. They'd say, well, we'll see what happens. You know?
Yeah, no. Yeah. I wouldn't want to drop my dog off if you didn't know you could get it back. So that.
No, me neither. I'm a big dog guy.
I know. Me too.
She's right here.
let's see the official alcohol dog here.
Doc, come here.
That's all right.
Doc.
I've seen him on your Facebook page. He's really
hiding. Okay.
That's okay. That's all right. You know, it's interesting. We had a reporter who was out walking the riverbed in Lakeside last week. I know it's not El Cajon, but talking to folks. And he came across a a gay couple that had lost things in the fire out there, and were saying like they wanted to get into a shelter somewhere, but they couldn't find places that would take a gay, you know, some unmarried couples. I've heard that from too, but apparently
I
also
think, I think that's couples. Not just gay couples. I think that's couples in general have trouble finding places where they can be together in a homeless program.
Right. And, yeah. It's a challenge. Maybe that's something the county or the county and cities collectively need to work on. If someone's, you know, not an addict or not mentally ill, but they can't go in, just like if you can't go in and with your dog or your cat, if you can't go in with your partner, whoever they are.
That, look, if that's a barrier to people getting treatment, I would be all in favor of taking that barrier away. It doesn't make sense to me that you can't treat people and figure that out.
Yeah. Well, Bill, are there any other issues we haven't talked about or any goals you have if you win re-election in November?
Well, you know, again, about 80% of my bandwidth is focused right now on trying to make the homeless situation better. You know, it's a tough balancing act because we certainly want to be compassionate to people and we don't want to be heavy-handed with people. On the other hand, I think people have a reasonable expectation to be able to walk down the street, to go to a park,
right?
To not be stepping in human feces, to not be watching people having sex next to where their kids are playing on the jungle gym, to not see needles and to not be harassed and to threatened.
Have the streets be safe and clean, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to the possibility of having a little bit more resources to work with so that we can be more innovative about doing both those things, about providing people an opportunity to get off the streets. Because if you want to talk about compassion, I think the most uncompassionate thing is to let people rot in an encampment on the side of the streets in their filth. You know, women get raped on a regular basis. My wife was a therapist at the Sandy Rescue Mission for many years. And, you know, she's really explained to me the rape culture that is endemic in the homeless. And she said every homeless woman that she dealt with had been raped multiple times.
Oh my gosh.
And sometimes on a daily basis. And, you know, so I don't think there's compassion to leave people in that situation.
No, you're
right. You know, certainly children should not be in that situation. You know, we've seen trafficking, we've seen sex abuse. And so there's all kinds of things that's happening in the homeless community that it's not compassionate to just let them stay that way. At some point, somebody has to be the adult and step in and say, okay, we're not going to allow this. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's this balancing act between doing that, keeping the streets safe, keeping the streets clean, making El Cajon a livable place for people, and at the same time, not invalidating people's constitutional rights. And so a lot of times what stops us from really being effective with that is having enough resources. And so we're working hard to get more resources. I'd certainly like to not be feuding with the county. I'd like to be working in harmony with them to try to fix these problems. They've got
hopefully everyone can sit down together at some point and they'll start.
Well, we're going to be all sitting down together on Friday. So that
good. I'm glad to hear
that. But you know, they've got a massive amount of money at their disposal, and I like to wrench some of that free so that we could focus on this area.
Yeah.
So that's one of my major goals is to really improve the homeless situation. I know we're not going to eradicate it. I know we're not going to solve it.
That's right. It's like drug use. It's never going to completely go away. We may wish it would, but
it's an unsolvable problem.
Minimize it. Yeah.
But at the same time, I think we can make a huge dent, and that's one of my major goals. I want to continue to have the police and the fire department feeling supported and really are supported so they can do their job effectively and keep people safe. I think that's a huge part of the job. Certainly, we want to continue to be careful about minding the store about how we spend our money and being prepared for whatever financial storms might come our way. And I think we're well set to do that now, but I want to continue to do that and not give in to the impulse to spend money wildly. And I'm pretty conservative financially, so I'm going to continue to kind of push in that direction.
I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
And then, like you said, with we have crisis, we have challenges with housing, affordable housing. I want to do everything I can to keep pushing for affordable housing. A lot of that has to do with, if you buy a house, I think it's $125,000 to get a water meter from Helix Water. You know, that's not our, I mean, we've already added a massive amount of money to even beginning to buy a house, not to mention all the building impact fees. You know, we got rid of all our building impact fees in El Cajon. We're doing everything we can to make it more affordable. And I want to keep fighting to do that. And I want to keep, not only fighting in our jurisdiction, but in countywide to kind of take away some of these ridiculous fees that cause, I've heard that many places in California, you're $400,000 into it before you even move a piece of lumber onto a property.
Yeah, it's very costly.
And that's just not acceptable. There's got to be ways that we can, meet our environmental needs and meet our other needs without pricing people out. I've got kids and grandkids. I want them to be able to live here in California. I want them to stay near me. And, they're under constant pressure to go move to someplace like Tennessee
or North Carolina.
Because they can't afford to live the quality of life that they'd like to live. And it's hard for me to argue with them, other than I just don't want you to go away. Yeah. And I think there's lots and lots of us that are dealing with those issues.
My daughter's in Washington State now. So yeah, I get it. Bill, if people want to find out more about your candidacy or get involved, do you have a website or anything that they can get more information at or get in touch?
I hate to say it, but the website is not up yet. It'll be up in another week. So I will get you that information. But they can always reach me through the city. Go to elcajon.gov. They can reach me through my city
the
email.
Mayor's office. Yeah, there you go. And when you get that website, let us know. And when we put the article up in the video. And
frankly, you have my cell phone number. So if there's one of your listeners who wants to call me, I give you permission to give them my cell phone number. I talk to everybody. I answer every email I get personally. I answer every phone call that is made to me.
That's very impressive. Well, listeners, if you tuned in late, we have been speaking with Bill Wells, the Honorable Mayor of El Cajon, about his reelection campaign and some of the key issues facing El Cajon. Bill, I want to give you the last word today and on anything else you want our listeners to know or viewers to know. And I want to thank you for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show.
I just want to say that it has been a great pleasure to be the mayor. Kind of come at me and say, it must be a huge burden for you. And it's not even in the least. I love it. I'm having a great time. I've always wanted to be of help. Every job I ever had has been in the helping profession. And this goes right along with that. Having said that, I don't really consider myself a politician. I don't. I will do this job as long as people want me to do it. And at some point when I lose an election, I'll be happy to go on my way and be a citizen and not have all these worries anymore. So I'm okay either way. But I think that's important because I think when you get people that are too focused on moving up the ladder and their whole life is revolved around politics.
Yeah. Or they're more focused on what they might have to do to think they need to get votes than to do what's right for the city. We see that in some places.
I totally agree with that. And I think that's a horrible place to be because then you're going to start making decisions that are compromised based upon what's best for my next election. Mm-hmm. I promise you that I won't do that. I will do what I think is right. Now, you may not always agree with me that what I'm doing, really is right. But I promise you that I will do what I think is right. And I will try to be fair and honest and listen to everybody's point of view and not be dismissive of other points of view. And I can say that because I'm comfortable with whatever happens. I'm a man of faith. I believe that God put me here and he can take me out when he's ready. And so I think it's important people to know that because a lot of times I get accused of being a careerist and, making calculated decisions to try to get to the next office. And I, people can believe what they want to believe, but I'm here to tell you that that's really not in my calculus. It's not how I'm thinking. I'm really trying to do what's right. And, you know, for what it's worth, that's how I feel.
Well, very good. Bill, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule as mayor of Occoquan to join us today on, you know, on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
You're listening to the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County, featuring all the top festivals, events, and attractions across our inland region. Julian Farm and Orchard's Harvest Fest runs weekends now through November. There's a giant pumpkin patch with pumpkins in all sizes, an arts and crafts area to decorate your own pumpkin, as well as a petting zoo, hayride, apple cider press, axe throwing, and new this year, a rock climbing wall. Some activities do require advanced sign-up and a fee. You can learn more at julianfarmandorchard.com. The 49th annual La Mesa Oktoberfest attracts revelers from across Southern California with live music, games, and three beer gardens with German and craft beers. This year's festivities, hosted by the La Mesa Village Association, take place September 30th through October 2nd in the downtown La Mesa Village. You can compete in broad-eating contests, yodeling competitions, beer barrel rolls, and a partner-carrying race, among other activities. There will also be live music and a craft show with over 100 vendors. Find details at lamesaoktoberfest.org. That's Oktoberfest with a K, O-K-T-O-B-E-R-F-E-S-T. The German American Club will host its own authentic Oktoberfest over two weekends, September 30th through October 2nd, and again October 7th through 9th at the club's headquarters on Mollison Avenue in El Cajon. You can savor authentic German food such as bratwurst, ox on the spit, sauerkraut, and Bavarian pastries. There's also a selection of German beers and German music by the Guggenbachbaum band, flown in from Germany. You can dance to polkas and oompa-pop songs, watch traditional folk dancing performances, compete in games and contests, check out vendor and crafts booths, and treat your kids to their own Kid Zone. For tickets and more info, you can visit GermanClubSanDiego.org. Parkway Plaza Regional Shopping Mall will host the first ever Taste for the Space competition on October 15th from noon to 3 p.m. A dozen businesses will compete for a prize package worth over $50,000, including a $20,000 business investment and 3 months of free rent. The diverse food businesses chosen to vie for the top prize offer a variety of cuisines, including French, Hungarian, Iraqi, Haitian, soul food, smokehouse barbecue, a bakery, vegan food, smoothies, and more. Attendees can taste delicious foods and enjoy activities, including a kids' fun zone and a brewery. All proceeds will be donated to Kitchens for Good. For more information on Taste for the Space or to get tickets, you can visit parkwayplaza.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Defensive and defiant, the California firefighters and a dispatcher break down their emotional walls, laughing, weeping, and recounting once secret stories about death, terror, and fire. They recall horrific sights of friends trapped by flames and reveal their urges to take their own lives. CalMatters reports that for firefighters battling California wildfires, these emotional injuries are a workplace hazard. Longer and more intense fire seasons have taken a visible toll on the state, leaving a tableau of charred forests and flattened towns. But they've also fueled a silent mental health crisis, including an alarming rise in post-traumatic stress disorder among the ranks of CAL FIRE, the state's firefighting service. When they race into wildfires, it's not just their bodies that are at risk, but their psyches too. Wildland firefighters arguably face more psychological stress than most, since their battles are prolonged and their personal risks are high. CAL FIRE Captain Mike Orton, a former Marine who recently transferred to a Los Angeles County inmate fire camp,
said,
"I would be willing to bet that there's suicidal ideation in half our employees right now, and half of them have a plan to do it." Firefighters, who in the past were stoic and suffered in silence, told CalMatters their emotional and personal stories, revealing their fears that their lack of sleep, long hours, and stress could lead to poor decisions on the fire lines, which would endanger not just the crews, but the public too, as California's wildfires intensify. Fatigued, traumatized, and frustrated, some California firefighters, including captains and battalion chiefs, say CAL FIRE must do more. Staffing shortages create punishing shifts, forced overtime, and long deployments. CAL FIRE crews keep crews on fires for 21 days without respite, while their counterparts with the federal government work 14-day shifts. Those deployments frequently go much longer. Many suffering from PTSD recount troubles receiving benefits and healthcare coverage under the state's workers' comp system, and some say family members cannot collect survivor's benefits for a firefighter suicide because it's not classified as a line-of-duty death. Firefighters and therapists said the job strains their marriages and families. One CAL FIRE battalion chief in Riverside County, Jeff Burrow, said 80% of his station house crew got divorced in a single year. Sleep deprivation, alcohol, and drug abuse are on the rise. Several firefighters described high turnover at their stations, and CAL FIRE statistics suggest the attrition has suddenly worsened. Last year, the number of firefighters and other full-time personnel voluntarily leaving was nearly twice the four-year average, reaching 691, more than 10% of the agency's workforce, according to data provided by CAL FIRE spokesperson Chris Amestoy. A 2016 report found that nationwide, firefighters are 40% more likely to take their own lives than the general population. In addition, in a 2019 online survey of more than 2,600 wildland firefighters, about a third reported experiencing suicidal thoughts, and nearly 40% said they had colleagues who had committed suicide. Many also reported persistent depression and anxiety. California's wildland firefighters are now in a defensive crouch, facing an amped up enemy fueled by climate change's most destructive weapons, the worst drought to grip the Southwest in 1,200 years. Loss of 130 million parched trees from disease and pest, and extreme weather conditions that defy predictability and precedent. And there is little indication that things will get better as California cycles into an era of what fire crews call drought fires, massive, stubborn, and dangerous. Wildland fire commanders caution their charges to keep their heads on a swivel, always alert to
danger.
Mental health experts now add another layer to that vigil. Firefighters must also be on the lookout for stress, fatigue, and trauma in themselves and their colleagues. It's tricky, however, to spot. This is Christy M. McCormick, reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Priebel, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.